Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the 8th edition of the Break Drink Podcast. And if you joined us last week and you're thinking last week was 6, how was this week 8? It's because we have a special edition earlier today. Me and Jeff Lell from the College of New Jersey, and if I'm giving the wrong school, Jeff, I apologize, had a podcast earlier today just talking about Google Buzz and how it can be integrated into to higher ed and student affairs. Gary and I talked about it a little bit last week. I hadn't really looked at it yet. Didn't have a guest this week. Lee Westcott from the Chronicle of Higher Education is going to join us next week on this podcast. And I didn't want to go a whole month without really going into more detail about it, so we had a little special edition. So join with us right now is Gary Ballinger, somewhere in the Midwest. Gary, are you with us? Oh, sorry. Gary's muted. Now Gary's with us.
Can you hear me? I am here now.
Yes. Sorry. So you're probably talking, but we didn't hear you. So.
That's okay. I'm in Illinois. That's what I was saying.
Okay. And from the state of Kentucky, we have Dr. Tom Jackson with us, who is the ACPA president and vice president of student affairs at University of Louisville.
Thanks for joining us, Dr. Jackson.
Hi, Dr. Jackson.
Oh, my pleasure.
Dr. Jackson, we've only had 8 podcasts, so we're kind of creating our tradition as we go along. You're our second guest. But we decided what we're going to do is we're going to create 5 questions that we want to kind of ask every guest as they come on. So you're actually the first person who gets to answer the 5 questions. So just to get to know a little bit more about you as before we jump into the interview. So the first question is to – now, you're a vice president of student affairs, so I'm sure you have a lot of experience. So the first question may be hard, but to briefly describe your experience in student affairs.
Actually, it can be fairly brief. I can easily give you an outline of some of the institutions and even the alma maters. I actually think it's really important that we recognize the many alma maters that we have for a lot of reasons, because they shape us in a way of who we are. My first alma mater is Highline Community College out of Seattle, Washington, where I was born and raised. And from there, I went to Southwest Minnesota in Marshall, Minnesota, then to Shippensburg University in Pennsylvania. My doctorate's from the University of Laverne outside of Los Angeles in California. The employers. Yeah, that's right. See the country, get a job or another degree, something like that. the employers starting, we were talking about this earlier, the employers coming out of graduate school, started off in Texas, San Antonio, St. Mary's University as the assistant director of residence life, then to the University of Southern California as an area coordinator, then to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo as an academic development specialist in housing, then back to Texas as the director of student activities at the University of Texas at El Paso, then to McMurray University as the dean of students in Abilene, Texas, then vice president for student affairs at Texas A&M Kingsville, then to the University of Louisville as the vice president. So it's all student affairs, and it's all been very educational and wonderful. And like most folks in student affairs, when you think of who we serve as our students, it makes you feel good inside. It's really hard to have a bad day when you think of how we really serve our students.
Well, small world. I have many relatives that went to McMurray University. And I myself went to Howard Payne University, which is right down the road from McMurray.
Yeah, that's an excellent university, and we played them a lot in all sports. I remember that a lot.
Mm-hmm. The small world there is, you kind of keep forgetting how small this community can be.
I think that dean of students at one time worked at McMurray University. So.
He's actually the vice president of student affairs. He was at McMurray one time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the dean was also.
Great. So question number two is, as we're called Brick Drink, I'm sure you haven't had a lot of free time to spend on the site, but the site is called Brick Drink is because we always, Gary and I work together at the University of Arizona, and even when I was at the University of Texas, we seem to always go together at some time today to get a drink, just to kind of get away from the office. But that was a big community building part of our days, to kind of be with your colleagues for a short time period. So the question number two is, what is your favorite thing? What is your favorite Brick Drink during the day?
See, when I thought, when you say that, I thought to myself, Brick Drink, are you asking me which article that publication or presentation you've done? Or do you want to know that I like to drink coffee?
Well,
so I'm going to answer both ways.
Yeah.
I'm going to answer both ways. I like coffee, and I usually have my cup and a half in the morning, and sometimes I will disappear in the afternoon, wander downstairs with either a member of the staff or a student for a coffee break, and we'll sit at the table and sip a cup of coffee. As far as your publications, I was struck by the 2020 Day 2 that I saw on your website because it reminded me of something we used to do back at UTEP, University of Texas at El Paso. You talked about finding your own voice or something to that effect. And I remember in student activities, Kim Brown at the time, she was one of the individuals working in student activities, started a program there, and it was designed to give our students opportunities to express themselves on difficult subjects, because what we were learning at that time simply was our students didn't know how to express themselves. We would go straight to it's personal, if you know what I mean. If I disagree with you, you immediately think it's personal, or I don't like you, or something like that, when it's okay to be, academically it is anyway, to have a different opinion of something.
Right.
In fact, that's the whole sense around it. So anyhow, the long and short of it is, I know it's a simple question, and I'll turn it into a long one. I like coffee.
The post you're speaking of is actually a blog article I found by an education blogger in England, and I just found him this week. It's a great blog, and he's doing like a list of 20 things every day, and so it was really cool to find that, and that was on, depending on when you hear this, yesterday being February 16th, on the 7 things you should read that day. That was a really great thing there. So the next question, and you are from Seattle, so I expect that to be coffee. who's influenced you the most in your career?
That's probably the easiest question you could ask me any day of the week. It's Dr. Charlie Fay. He's the VP for Student Affairs at the University of Akron. He was the first person who hired me out of graduate school. He was the Dean of Students at St. Mary's University, and then I later worked for him again when he was the Dean of Students at the University of Texas at El Paso. And over the course of my entire career, I've held on pretty tightly to his coattails on a lot of fronts. We've authored together, presented dozens of presentations at ACPA and NASPA. He's also the person who brought me to my very first solo ACPA, and then immediately got me involved in things at ACPA, particularly the Commission for Administrative Leadership. So he's been most instrumental in my entire career, and has become one of my dearest friends in the world.
Great. And I think we all have that, you know, one or two people like that. So it was great to hear those stories. We believe a lot in technology here, so I wanted to ask, you know, what's your favorite technology or your favorite tool that you use on your campus as far as either communicating with students or organizing kind of yourself throughout the day or anything like that?
I wish I would have sat in on your Google Buzz today. I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to do that, because my guess is you're probably talking about something that we'll all be dealing with in the coming weeks. I live by my cell phone and texting.
Okay.
Quite honestly, that's the thing that I probably use the most other than my PC. But that's not a sexy thing anymore. I communicate mostly with our students or our student government association by text messages. But then, you know, technically speaking, Jeff, the root of texting is communication. And you can argue that the characters of our words at one time was technical. So, however
sure.
you want to look at it, but I'm a texter. So.
Yeah. Do you have like a fancy phone, or do you have like a BlackBerry or iPhone or?
What would you describe a fancy phone?
anything besides, like I went from just having a phone that basically just dialed, and you could text, but it took me forever to text you with just the 9 to 10 keypad, to an iPhone, which is like life changing.
So you have an iPhone?
I do have an iPhone. I'm about to have an Android phone though. I'm gonna go with the Nexus One.
See, I wanna find someone who has the Nexus One. And play with it a little while. I have a Palm Pre that I enjoy very much. It's really good. It's really good technology. The web operating system is very solid and impressive. I just wish it were a little faster and had a little marketing oomph behind it in the front end, because it probably would have caught on quicker. But it may find itself to be the best technology out there, I think.
And now they have a new Palm Pre that's coming, like a new one that's coming out too, which is interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yes, I would count the Palm Pre as a fancy phone.
Yeah, it is pretty fancy. 6 months old, I think. Maybe.
It's 6 months outdated.
That's right.
It goes
that's right. Well, the Nexus One, like you said, so.
And then the last question is, give us one prediction that you see in the next 2 years in student affairs.
Just one? And how serious do you want it? I'll give you a serious one, I think, because we're all in student affairs. I think we have to figure out ways to deal with the mental health of our campuses.
Oh, agreed.
It is a difficult one, and there are no easy ways to do it. I think we really have to be careful to not prejudge individuals for being expressive. We have, for example, on our campuses today, faculty who see different students and then raise yellow flags because they're different. And that really should be the norm on our campuses. So I really worry, not just for our faculty, but also for our students, that the student who is a little different or maybe isn't as socially stable will draw attention to themselves and then get caught in this loop that they should or shouldn't be in. And I also worry about the stresses of our workplace, family homes, and all those other things, and how they impact individuals. There just seems to be a lot of, a lot is too strong of a word. There just seems to be an increasing number of incidences that are occurring on our campuses that are centered around mental health, and we really need to get out in front of it somehow.
Yeah, I agree, and it's not really being talked about much, and it's such a kind of, I guess, I don't know if it's just the stigmatism is why we're not talking about it, but yeah, I would agree that we really need to start talking about that more and finding that.
Yeah, I think back in graduate school, we actually did one of our program evaluations projects. We did kind of an evaluation of a first year initiative program. And one of the areas that I specifically looked at was referrals to places, so referrals to Career Center or the Mental Health Center or Campus Health. And the numbers at that time, and this was almost 10 years ago now, 10 years ago, actually, the numbers of individual students who were referred to Campus Health for mental health issues was unbelievable. Like it was something like 50-something percent, and we had a pretty large sample size. And I had no idea as far as the scope, or we didn't have or go into too much depth into that exactly, because it was really just trying to see where students were being referred on campus. But to see those numbers pop up then 10 years ago, I can imagine that today, with today's pressure and today's, ever-changing campus structure, and it's even higher than that in a lot of campuses, and the resources aren't always there, I think, for campus counseling services and mental health services on campus.
You know, Gary, if I can add something to that, the referrals and the things that we do inside the counseling centers today are at the tail end of, in a way, the problem. And
right.
I often wonder what, to me, sometimes I wonder if there's a research opportunity here, a really good research opportunity for our profession, to go back to the root cause of why we may be having some of these challenges on our campuses today. What changed 20, 30, 40 years ago that led us to this place today, if anything? Maybe it was 10 years ago we did something differently, or we put something in the water, or we changed how we interact, or you know where I'm going with this. And so I wonder if there's a root cause that we can discover by greater research that might solve the problem before it actually gets to us.
Yeah, I agree.
That would be a great podcast all to its own, is to start hashing out some of these issues. Well, everyone, the reason I asked Dr. Jackson to join us today is because if you don't know, NASPA and ACPA are in the process of unifying to become one organization. I guess you're in the process or talking to do that. I don't want to use the wrong language there, but they seem to be moving towards unification. So we wanted to ask a few questions and see where we are in the process with Dr. Jackson. And before I forget, there was one question on the blog that someone asked that I wanted to ask you that wasn't quite about this. I don't want to forget it, so I'm going to go and get that out of the way. If you want to call in and ask a question, you can dial 646-652-2342. Also, if you go to breakdrink.com/live, there's a little chat box there, and we'll be monitoring that throughout the thing also, so you can type in a question there. So Eric Stoller, who's a academic advisor at Oregon State University, Dr. Jackson, asked if you plan to be using Twitter to interact with people during the conference, the ACPA conference.
That's a good question. For some of you, you may not know, but I have a Twitter account that I've tweeted. I won't say regularly, but probably more than the average person since on the beginning of my term as president for ACPA, and that would be twitter.com/ACPAPrez, as in PREZ, and I would welcome more followers, particularly since in a month or so I'll be transitioning out into past president, and Dr. Susan Salvador will be assuming the helm and probably will want to continue that. My question for Eric would be, what would I tweet? The Boston convention team is a part of Twitter. I'm not really sure what I would tweet on a regular basis while I was at the convention, so I'm open for ideas. I mean, I already have it sitting there on my phone and on my PC, so I'm open to doing it. I'm just not sure what folks would want to know. So give me some ideas.
That's a little more than where you're going to dinner.
Yeah, right. Right. Give me an idea, and I'll be happy to follow through with it, I guess. It's a good idea, and I don't mind doing it.
I was at South by Southwest Interactive last year, and I don't know how many people actually go to South by Southwest Interactive, but everyone has, like, at least one Twitter account, if not more than one, for like their company or their organization they're representing also. So it was kind of off. The Twitter things were off the chart. But people were sharing, which I don't think ACPA is necessarily ready for this, but people were using Twitter as a way to ask questions to presenters. It's kind of a back channel. So if it was a room of 200 people and there's conversation going on, you couldn't get your question in, They could answer it with a hashtag or with a subject in Twitter. But there may be a way, and I may send a message to Eric to think, you know, ways that would be usable at an ACPA conference versus a technology conference to keep some communication flowing, you know, amongst the conference and participants, or what booth in the convention has the best giveaways and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so on to the questions. I'm not totally for sure on the history. I've been a member of both ACPA and NASPA, and I was told, despite when I was asking about why are there two organizations, because I assumed there would be one organization, but there were two, asked why, and no one really gave me a really good reason, but they did say they believe that it used to be one organization and which grew into two organizations. So can you give us a brief, maybe a brief history of NASPA and ACPA?
Oh, that's asking a lot. ACPA, I'm not exactly sure the year NASPA was founded. It was founded before ACPA, primarily serving deans, and ACPA was at one time founded in 1924 by Mary Cheney, but it was a part of a larger association, and then a couple of decades ago it split off to become a standalone association that we now know of simply as ACPA. The two organizations have coexisted for better than 90 years, or exactly 90 years, and have been parallel in many ways, one serving basically one group primarily in its foundation, and the other serving many others. And over the course of the last decade, because of the complexity of student affairs, arguably, I think we've become a lot more alike than we have not. Our members are increasingly becoming more of the same. We all share the same profession in student affairs.
Mm-hmm.
You may be an ASPA member, I may be an ACPA member, and we both work in the same university, and the only thing that separates the two of us may be the conference or convention that we go to or the journal we may read. You
mm-hmm.
and I happen to be members of both associations, and we're finding that more and more people are doing that so that they don't miss out on the subtle differences between the two associations. But they have both existed for quite a long time by themselves. And,
okay.
And one minor correction to your intro on the subject, we're in the discussion phase of this process toward consolidation. We still have a few steps to go before we get into the finer details of whether we actually will be consolidating. We're still exploring it. It certainly isn't a done deal, as many that I talk to on a regular basis will share. But we are certainly on a positive path and discussing the specifics of what one new association that combines the best in a way of both might look like. And that's, to me, someplace we've never been before.
Okay. And real quick, Gary's about to ask a question, but someone called and dropped off the line. If you call, just be patient, and then we'll try to work you in when we can. So go ahead, Gary.
I think one of the things that when people think of their professional associations, they really think of it in terms of a lot of times the conference or the time when they're interacting face-to-face with their colleagues. But the organization is a lot bigger than that. So can you maybe give us a brief understanding of the scope of ACPA and the importance of the organization as you see it?
Mm-hmm. I could speak in a subtle way about both in that sense, because both mm-hmm. are, again, I use the root, at the root of building relationships amongst colleagues. That's the strength of both associations. And you talked about the conference and the convention. That's where our staff, our people, our colleagues come together to share ideas and to build relationships that really transform our careers, much like my very first interaction with Charlie Fay 20-something years ago that we talked about a little earlier. And so at the root of both of our associations is sharing information and knowledge to really help practitioners better serve our students on our campus. There certainly are different value systems tied into that and different functional areas between the two different mm-hmm. associations, particularly ACPA. But when you cut it all that away, what's the most important thing is what are we doing to gain new knowledge to improve our profession and serve our students. That's
great.
What ACPA does. In the simplest, most benign form, we bring people together, we share research, we share knowledge so that we can better serve our students.
Excellent. Thank you.
No, you probably wanted a few more specifics than that, I think, though.
I think that's great. Actually, we have two questions. I think Eric is going to actually try to call us. He had the question about tweeting during the conference. So he's going to try to come in. We also have a question in the chat room, which goes along the line with kind of a question that we had. But Jeff Lell, who did the podcasting earlier today, had a question that when he mentions this is happening, or I guess talks of it is happening with his colleagues and mentors in grad school, They always respond, but that's been a possibility for ages. So what makes this attempt at merging, use the word merging, but I would say unification, different? And kind of the question I was going to ask that goes along with this is kind of what was it that sparked this at this time?
Those are good questions. I'll start with the first one. The associations over the last few decades have, I guess, broached the subject in their own ways, and it didn't get very far for different reasons. The associations had mostly different members. They were on their way upward, thriving, and that was working for both associations. Lately, as we look at what each association is doing, there's more duplicity between the two associations. We basically share and present similar programs and presentations. We compete against one another in very collegial ways, which costs money in its own right. The economy and the downturn of the economy, and then the unification and consolidation of different entities that are out there, that raised the bar a little bit for us as well, knowing that we as institutions are investing in two associations that are similar in scope and service. And then our members quietly were asking the same question as you just brought up. And that made a big difference, because when our members started asking this question, it in essence inspired the thought of what do we do next. And with the work of two past presidents in ACP and NASPA, and many presidents before that, I should mind you, some work started with a joint task force on the futures of the profession. And in one of those early reports, it suggested that we really needed to look at how ACPA and NASPA work together. And that led both of our two respective governing boards, ACPA's governing board and NASPA's board of trustees, to begin talking about this. And it really started then with the presidents. When I say presidents, that would be the president of NASPA, past president of NASPA, incoming president of NASPA, and those counterparts within ACPA. And so between our collective dialogue and our members talking, and the downturn of the economy, and the competition, and the duplication, and some of the same people, it just raised the question, we really should have this conversation one more time, and really give it our best academic try. If our members really want it, then let's see if they really want it. And let's do the best job that we can as leaders of our two associations to ask those questions, to do our due diligence, to look at the finer details, to engage our membership in the dialogue, to get as many people involved, and to really see if this is the right thing to do at this time for all the right reasons. And we're in that process right now, going through that.
I want to go ahead and bring on Eric. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. So Eric Stoller from Skype from Oregon State University is on.
Yeah, talking the talk here, I guess. I might as well use the technology if I talk about it all the time.
You can't go back to that antiquated phone system.
No, I'm actually coming. I'm coming to you live via two cans connected by a wire.
Perfect. Sounds
great.
Like that commercial.
Erica, thanks for joining us. I guess you heard the question earlier, and Dr. Jackson's asking what ways would you want him to be using Twitter during the conference.
Absolutely. Well, just a miniature plug here in terms of my rationale for asking the question was that I'm co-presenting a session at ACPA in Boston next month on demystifying social media for senior student affairs officers. I'm doing that with Ken Elmore, Dean of Students at Boston University. And I would suggest, when I talk about Twitter with folks that, don't want to talk about necessarily the weather or their day, but that networking piece, the connections that you make, the community that you build, just because for me, that's really the essence of Twitter is the community, which could, for Dr. Jackson, at ACPA in Boston, could just be, went to a terrific session on XYZ, my next meeting is going to be with the following folks, and just kind of given a snapshot of the conference from someone's perspective who is there in a leadership role for those of us that maybe aren't attending the event?
Well, I can do that. I need more members, though. certainly more followers. So if you help me, I'll do that if you can help me plug my Twitter account.
Oh,
we're doing it. If I get enough members, I'll gladly do that. What's that?
How many people do you have following you right now?
I have 51 en route to 500. You're going to help me get 500, aren't you?
Oh yeah, we're going to get you up.
No problem.
one of the events that's sort of occurring on the side here is the people who participate in the SA chat, the student affairs chat, are going to have what's called a tweet up in Boston, which is basically all the folks that are going to ACPA who participate in this sort of student affairs Twitterers group are going to get together for dinner and a big meetup. So you're obviously invited to that. And I think that we'll probably, we'll definitely give you some press. We've started a hashtag for the event. Just in every tweet that you use, if you want to mention that you're talking about the conference, put #, and then ACPA, and then the numbers 10. And that way we can keep track of everything that everyone is saying about the 2010 ACPA annual convention.
Eric, is anyone aggregating that, like using Covert Live or Scribble or something like that, to pull all those together?
Not to my knowledge. I have a list that I created on Twitter. So if you look at my list, and I can tweet that here shortly, but I've got a list of just those folks who have indicated to me that they're going to be participating in the ACPA 2010 tweet up.
Okay. I may like take your list and embed it somewhere so people can follow that in one location, or just do a search for the hashtag with Cover It Live or something like that, just so people can who aren't there, like I'm not going to be able to make it this year, will be able to still follow it.
That sounds great.
And I will say the Student Affairs Chat Committee has, I think it's a really great community. I talked about this with Jeff earlier today. There's actually very few people that I actually know in person that are in the Student Affairs Chat. So I know Gary because we work together. I've never actually met Eric before, but we've been on Twitter for over a year talking back and forth.
We're long-time friends.
Yeah, I feel like I know a lot of people, and sometimes it's I saw Jeff and Ed talking how they look forward to meeting each other at ACUI, and I realized I just assumed that they knew each other because they talk so much online, and they help and people are helping each other out. They're very supportive. They help out each other a lot. So I think it's a very very special student affairs community we have on Twitter then. And Eric, are you going to have your session Ustreamed?
I don't know about that. The internet connectivity sometimes at convention centers can be interesting.
Yeah, or cost like $1,000.
Yeah, the budget's usually when folks are reserving convention space at hotels, they're usually not thinking about wireless connectivity or, a direct connection to the web when they're negotiating the contracts, 3-4 years out.
Yeah.
Interestingly, we focused a lot on this. Is Tom here. We focused a lot on that the past few years, trying to make sure that we had that web connectivity for our members because they were, again, demanding it and using it on a regular basis. But you're absolutely right. We're just one convention in a hotel, and it surprises me that some venues are still charging, one, the prices that they're charging for utility in a way, and then probably more importantly, that it's not as strong as it should be given how demanding we are, not just us, but our society today on the internet and having
right.
bandwidth and accessibility. So I think you're dead on that our hotels and our convention areas really need to step it up across the board for our members.
When I was at OrgSync and one of the and I won't name the conference, but one of the conferences, it was not ACPA, but a different conference I went to, because we went to like 10 a year, they were going to charge us $250 to have a cable brought to our table. And so we brought our own internet with us. We had a wireless card and hooked it into a router and brought our own hotspot with us. But it cost us all about $200, and that's for every conference we went to. So. Yeah, there's ways to get around it now, so they need to kind of get with it, or they're not going to make any money with that anymore. So. All right. Well, Eric, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
And I'd love to hear how your conference went, how your session went. So maybe you can join us on the podcast after the presentation with Dean Aylmore to let us know how it went.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. See you, Eric.
Take care.
And that was actually Dr. Jackson. That was actually our first call-in caller. So
it is.
Oh. Yeah.
All kinds of firsts tonight.
Yeah. So I was kind of not sure if I could actually get him on the air. I was like, I think I pushed this button. I think that's how it works. But so very, very exciting. So this, jumping back to the unification questions, I know you've taken – to this point, I think most of the steps you've taken have probably been procedural, you know, kind of you need to vote on some things and you need to have some certain conversations on things. But and I think you kind of covered this as far as the steps you've taken. But what's the next steps that you have?
Mm-hmm. Let me go back one step on some of that. Over the past 2 years, there have been some good dialogue, on this subject that increasingly grew this last year. And for those listeners, basically from last summer through December, the phone lines, you could say, were wide open. Every email, every phone call, we responded and listened to from our members across the board. The leadership of both associations went to nearly every state meeting, regional meeting, group meeting, you name it, and they opened themselves up to responding to these questions and collecting feedback to help guide this process. And one of the most important things we heard, and for the most part, many people were favorable toward continuing these conversations. But having said that, one of the most important things they did was to continue to be transparent and involve as many people as we can in the next step. And that's the place that we are at right now. And so for those that have been following the web pages of both ACPA and ASPA, mm-hmm. you'll see that we've established our subcommittees. Now, those subcommittees were both voted upon by NASPA and ACPA. And since you're talking about first tonight, Jeff, one of the neat things about this entire process is up until last year, the president and of ACPA and NASPA in the past and in future and all those other things, along with the executive directors, had never come together in a retreat and talk about student affairs issues or how our associations could work together. And we did that for the very first time last year. That was followed up by a follow-up meeting to talk about consolidation as a team and to lay out the beginning stages of the process and the communication plan and involving our members in feedback collection on those things. And then we met again this January to lay out this process right here. So we went from 0 to 3 all within the span of 9 months, and we talked to each other in a way that we had never spoken to each other ever before. Our two collective boards had never had the opportunity to take any action on this topic, and so far in the last year, our governing board and NASPA's board of trustees have taken action twice, and those have led us to this place that we are now, which is subcommittees. We've involved the board members and different leaders within both ACPA and NASPA on 8 different subcommittees, and the work of those subcommittees is to answer key questions out there that might help design's too strong of a word, help guide what a new association might look like. And these aren't questions like, how do you make the NASPA placement fit into the ACPA placement or vice versa? They're not simple questions like that. In fact, they're the exact opposite, because we don't want to know how you marry the two together and make a square fit into a circle. We really want to look at the higher calling question of what do we really need as a profession when it comes to our placement needs? How do we involve search committees or search firms? What's the role of those search firms? What do our members want? What role should placement service play? Those kind of questions are the ones that we're kind of asking. If you think about even the geography question within ACP and NASPA, or better yet, conference question, many people get hung up on, well, I don't like a big conference. The last time I went to ACP and NASPA, it was just too big. Many people will say that. But in a strange way, that's not really the question we want to know the answer to. The question is, in a way, why do we even need one? What's the purpose? Who should come to those? Why do they come to these? Because in a way, that helps shape what we do at a conference or a convention ultimately, which also then drives who goes and how and what services need to be provided at these kind of things. And it's not so much that we need to have one big one. We might have two little ones or four big ones or one national, one international, or one virtual and one not. We're basically saying anything is possible. You tell us as a leadership team, and that will help guide us. And so we've kind of taken away all the borders and the preconceived notions of what ACPA and NASPA should look like or could look like, and basically said, you tell us, with no borders, what should the ideal new association look like? That's our next step.
Back to the search question. I haven't just gone through a search. I had the idea that all hires and student affairs, because the process can be very tedious, what should happen is there should be agents that work like sports agents, and they'll go and find a job for you at the school. So then all you have to do is show up for the press conference. And so if y'all could work that out, that would be great.
I like that idea. I think you opened up a new field for the student affairs practitioners. So not only will we have directors of student activities, we'll have the director of Jeff Jackson Marketing or something like that.
Perfect. He'd love that, I'm sure. One of the things that you had mentioned was the conference, and I think that's one of the first thing that members or colleagues think about when they talk about the possibility of unification. Oh my gosh, what is the conference gonna look like? So I'm glad you kind of addressed that there. And we had actually talked about this maybe on the first podcast, actually, very briefly, and that was one of the things I said. I'm like, well, maybe there'll be more emphasis on the regional conferences, or perhaps conferences will be based on topics, and or you know, there are so many other things that you can do other than, you know, having one mass conference, geographically, topically, virtually. So it's good that they're exploring on a much broader basis, I think, the implications of that on.
On that note, there's one thing that we all value, both ACP and NASPA, and that's the bringing together of our members. NASPA especially feels very, very good about their regional and the role that they play in bringing people together to share knowledge, which better serves our students, like I said before. So does ACPA with our state system, our 30-something states. And so both associations recognize that we are in the business of bringing people together. And when we bring our colleagues together, we share ideas and we share knowledge, and it makes for better product to our students. So whatever happens, those things aren't going to go away, because that's the essence and the fabric of what it means to be a student affairs practitioner. Those things most likely will exist. But if we're talking about it from an academic standpoint, you can't start at that point. You have to go back a step or two and ask fundamentally, what should we be talking about, or what should we look like first, rather than prescribing that we might have people together in a certain place. And so having a more generalized question first.
Absolutely. I think that's really important. And what has, not completely done with this process, but kind of somewhere in the middle, would you say in the middle or early stages, where would you say you are as far as, you know, the talks of the unification?
That's hard to say.
Let me
frame it this way, if I could. Mm-hmm. I know that the subcommittees will continue their work through June, and that there's a very tight timeline. We have basically asked all of our subcommittees to meet face-to-face at either ACPA or NASPA. Mm-hmm. That's pretty big, if you think about it, that subcommittees will be meeting and talking and working together on this. Middle June, their reports will be completed. The steering team will review those, provide feedback. and our boards are meeting together. Another first, we'll be meeting together in our summer leadership meetings. That never happened, and some would say, don't let it happen, or some might even joke and say, I never thought I would see the day that the ACCA board and the NASPA board would be in the same city and actually be working together. But that's what's happening this summer. And depending upon how that progresses, the members may have an opportunity to weigh in on this very substantially during the fall. Now, what would that weigh-in be? It could be a vote. It could be a conversation. It could be something else. We're just not quite there yet. I do know, though, that we're on a path that has involved 60-plus different people in our profession to help talk about some key things on 8 different subcommittees. For me, what's most important isn't that we consolidate. That's never been the question for me. I like NASPA, and I like ACPA for different reasons, and there's a reason I'm a member of both. And I value both organizations for who they are and how they serve their members. Mm-hmm. I think the question for me is, how do we let our members decide whether we should be one association or not? And that's the path that we're working on right now. If our members don't want that, our members don't want that, and that's okay. It's got to be okay. That's the whole process. If our members do, then I think we have a duty to follow through with that and do the best job we can.
Thank you.
Yeah. And if you're listening to us, we're talking with Dr. Tom Jackson, president of ACPA and vice president of University of Louisville. If you want to call in and ask a question, you can call in at 646-652-2342. We have about 13 minutes remaining. Or if you're on the website, you can go to breakdrink.com/live and type a question in the chat box there. So if you have a question, get in fast because time goes quite fast in your podcasting, I must say. I thought an hour is going to be hard to fill, but every time we always get cut off really short. So, and you're talking about the, you know, working with the members. I think both sides and both organizations have done a great job of communicating information and putting it on the website and making yourself available to receive feedback. But what has the feedback been? Has it been positive? Has it been negative? Has it just been questions? And what's the feedback been like from, at least from your side, your perspective?
I won't speak for Mike Sagala, the NASPA president, although I'm aware of some of the feedback he's received. But I think it'd be better that he respond to that at some point in time. I do believe from the readings and the emails that I've received that for the most part, the ACPA membership has been, and I'll say it this way, overwhelmingly favorable toward continuing these conversations. Now, there are some, rightfully so, who will say, let's look at our details and see how this progresses. Now, that is also the context of when you think about it being, this is too strong, but I'll say it in this way, turf-oriented or protecting ACPA or protecting NASPA. And in a way, certainly we have to do that. But I think, again, there's a larger question. What is our profession going to look like in the future, and how would one association better serve that profession in the future? How could one association better lobby for the things that we need to better serve our students? A student affairs single organization entity could really, I mean, if it's designed in a very unique way, and ties in our sister associations that are in the other areas. Just think of every person in student affairs having a lobbyist in a way in D.C. and how we could shape how our politicians and our other educators view some of the things we're dealing with on a university campus. That's the influence that a single association could have that would be, in a way, louder and maybe even more influential than many of the other academic associations.
Dr.
Now, I'm not
Jackson,
saying that's the goal. I'm saying that's important.
When we first talked, I thought I was thinking of the benefits in this, and I was like how great would it be? Because I was excited about it, the fact that the two organizations could be joined. I see it as a very positive thing, a good thing. I thought, how great would that be? Like, I don't know if we need a lobbyist, but how great would it be that we would have this size of an organization and the power behind this organization to do that when the time comes that we need that? I just think there's so many benefits of it. I see the regions being stronger because there's more people in the region that aren't divided in loyalty is what you, as you brought up. And so I see so many positive, I think, outcomes coming from this. And I did have one other question when you're talking about unification. I think you've answered this. I just wanted to go ahead and clarify it. But when it comes to, like, you know, each organization has different regions which are aligned differently. Each has different either subcommittees or, I think, master cause of knowledge communities, which kind of overlap at times, kind of don't at other times. And I think the question is, and I think you've answered this again, but when you're looking at this, I think you're looking at it more like you're starting from scratch. You're not trying to put one into the other. You're not trying to just merge the two names together. But it sounds like you're kind of starting from scratch and creating an organization from ground up. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
The idea is that, yeah, we know there are knowledge communities and that there are commissions or standing committees that overlap each other extremely well from what they may do. The people may be somewhat the same and they may be different, and certainly the leadership would be different. But if you take that all away, the question is then, why do we have them? Who do they serve? How do they serve? And let's start from scratch. And they may all be there at the end, and that may be good. There may be other needs along the way also. We don't know. It's really, let's talk about it, see what we need, see what the profession wants, see what our members want, and design in a way the possibility of a new association. So you're absolutely right. It's not marrying or overlapping what one association has and making it fit into the other. It's going back to scratch and saying what really ought this look like.
Great. Well, Dr. Jackson, I think that's all the questions we have right now. So thank you so much for, you know, taking time out of your evening to dial in and talk to us.
I can close on one little quick note, and that is to encourage those that listen to this to do as we did in a way, if you could, and that is to not have a preconceived notion of what an ACPA or an ASPA could look like or what the profession may look like in the future, per se. It's to leave an open mind to what this process may bring us forthcoming, because we have a lot of good people trying to do some good work for our shared memberships in hopes that we can present and share information that actually inspires the profession in a way that might best serve us for the next several decades and ultimately better serve our students. So I ask the listeners to follow both websites, ACPAs and ASPAs, and stay engaged in the process. And again, like I said, lose some of the preconceived notions and give us a chance to really work through some of the details.
And, you know, I would say, one, if you haven't seen those links yet, I blogged about this back in January. If you just do a search for ACPA on brightdream.com, you'll find this. And I'll repost the links again later on this week if you haven't looked at those sites yet. I'll also say about your Twitter account, I actually discovered this following you on Twitter. I was following you, and I saw something you posted about back in January about this last step, the next step you've taken to join this, and I read your blog article, and so that's how I originally found out about this. So so it does pay to follow you on Twitter. So give us your Twitter handle one more time.
ACPA Prez. That's all. ACPA Prez.
Okay.
And I often will give you the link to my blog also, which is acpa-president.blogspot.com. So follow them. Susan will be taking them over. Susan Salvador will be taking them over here shortly. But there's a lot of information on there and a lot of guest authors that have shared information on the blog. So
we will start the ACPA Prez campaign to follow you starting tomorrow. So hopefully
great out there.
Yeah. Hopefully you'll get more followers.
I look forward to it.
Eric is way more influential than me, so I'm sure Eric will pull a lot more weight in the Twitter sphere to get you some followers there. So,
well, either again, way, I'll tweet at least once just so I can say to Eric that I did it.
Or he may just follow you around and tweet for you.
Yeah, well, there we go. That works a lot better. Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate your invitation.
Yeah, and if you ever have an update you want to share, you're always welcome to come back and share it.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank
you. You too.
Okay.
That was Dr. Tom Jackson, president of ACPA and vice president of student affairs at Louisville University. So that was pretty great.
It was a good conversation. It's good. It's pretty informative, I think, as far as, you know, the conversations that they've had and some of the logic and where they are in the process, and just really letting people know, you know, what the next steps are and how they can be heard, I think. And that's an important thing.
Yeah. And there's a lot more history of those two organizations than I realized. And when you mm-hmm. think that they've been separately for over 90 years, I mean, I think this really in our profession is a historic moment, you know, that we're able to reshape something. And education, you don't get to do that often. You kind of have to live by traditions, and we've always done it that way. So this kind of gives you a time to do that. So that's pretty exciting. So we have almost no time, which is fine, because this is a good conversation. I do want to point out, I did a blog starting Friday about the shooting at University of Alabama Huntsville.
Right.
Like I say, it was very hard for me to know what to write about, and I didn't want to speculate. You know, I'm not like a trained journalist. I didn't want to be tabloid-like either, which a lot of websites were doing. So I just tried to share information that I thought would be useful for you to know as a professional, and to also, you know, talk about the situation, and so be respectful of what happened there. I think this is something we need to talk about on a larger scale sometime. I think Dr. Jackson brought up a great point just about the mental well-being of a campus and caring for that. And being preemptive in that, and that goes to the faculty and it goes to the staff also.
I agree. I think it's something that we should look at exploring in a future podcast for sure.
Yeah. So prayers go out to that state and that institution and the biology department, and I can't imagine what they're going through there, and the students, the fact that we are in the middle of the semester, and I don't want to be callous of the lives lost, but at the same time, I automatically go to the reality of they have to find faculty,
right.
And they have to find them fast, and you know, this is not like a normal hiring time, so.
Right.
I'll keep following that story, but until we get to a trial or something that comes up unforeseen, I don't want to be just too tabloid about it. So I probably won't do updates as often as I did over the weekend about that. But I may put something else out there sometime soon. I'll keep following. I just don't want to keep drowning everyone in information just kind of tabloid like on there. So next week, I'm kind of excited for next week.
It's going to be fun, I think.
Yes, two guests in a row. I think, is it Lee Westcott? Is that her name?
I would say Leah, but it could be Lee, I guess.
Leah Westcott. See, that's
yeah.
That's the great thing about next week is she can tell me how to pronounce her name properly.
That would be perfect. First question.
Yes. yes. What is your name? But she's the editor of The Crunk of Higher Education, which is a hilarious website. And, you know, we connected, Gary connected with her also via Twitter. So I will look forward to that. So that will be a, you know, if anything, probably our funniest website next week. Our funniest podcast next week. So.
Yes.
Gary, in 30 seconds, is there anything you want to add?
No, it's cold in Illinois, but that's nothing new.
Yes. It's still.
Report.
I don't want to complain about 40 degrees because I know it's cooler other places, but I have to deal with heat. So this is the time I need warmer weather. So
yeah.
It needs to get warmer in Texas, which
maybe
may happen
soon. Maybe soon.
Yeah. So thanks. thanks for joining us for this Bright Dreams podcast. Gary, thanks for joining us as always.
Thank you.
And special thanks to Dr. Tom Jackson for joining us from University of Louisville and president of ACPA. So have a great night, everyone.
Thank you.